Welcome back to Car Argumentative, a show where an ever-changing lineup of men are here to talk to you about cars and all things automotive. I'm The Rock, your host, Thomas Faulkner from the Sunday Times, and today we're joined by...
Miles from... I don't know where exactly.
Where are you from, Miles?
I do many things, but yeah. I do a bit of journalism, not quite as professional as Tom, but...
That's a good
thing. That.
Are you like Tom, a part-time male prostitute?
No, I'm a part-time accountant on the other side of that coin.
Oh, how's that, eh?
Yeah.
Sure, I would say that we're sort of in the majority here. I mean, it's 50-50, but...
No,
there are 50-50 male prostitutes and accountants.
That's it.
So Nadav and I are obviously,
I don't know what you're saying, Mark, but I don't like it.
So it's very good to be back with you gents, eh?
You haven't been here for, what, 4 weeks?
I think it's been 4 weeks.
CrossFit and shul and...
And playing golf in Sun City.
Yeah.
Did you actually play golf?
I did.
Can you remember what you did at Sun City?
Well, most of it.
Are there cohesive memories you could piece together?
Most of it. I made two birdies and about four pars.
I don't know what
that
is.
I don't know what that means. It sounds good.
Yeah, it was
I'm
good.
I'm impressed.
Not as impressed as I was.
Okay. Two birdies, eh?
But I think...
Tweet. You know what they say? Two birdies in the par are worth three in the box.
Do they? Yeah. Is that what they say?
Something like that.
Okay.
But
congrats, Mark.
Thank you. But a bigger congratulations. Today, a very important car was used that we weren't sure that it was going to get used. But the open top bus celebrating the Springboks win in Japan. One of the greatest sporting results I've experienced, and I'm personally over the moon. I don't think I'm ever going to forgive you for driving during the World Cup.
I did.
It's absolutely not even from a sporting perspective, from a patriotism perspective.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up, but
I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to shame you.
It was a calculated move.
At least
to get the roads would be empty. Don't need a time for a drive. I need to bed my brakes in, and it was a good call. Actually.
It wasn't. It really wasn't.
I enjoyed it.
You may have enjoyed it, but it just is wrong on many levels.
Everyone else kept me informed as to what was going on. The roads weren't as empty as I would have thought.
You driving?
GT3. Oh. Yeah. So it was great. I'm sorry I didn't watch the match. I apologize.
I hope you got stone chips.
I'm disappointed with you.
Are you?
I'm quite upset.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that you'd feel so strongly, you guys. I know Mike would feel strongly. Miles, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm on Mike's side, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're disappointed in me.
I mean, we were watching a cross-country race, and we stopped everything to go and watch the rugby.
So who has a cross-country race during the rugby?
That's just how SA Motorsport is organized.
Oh, cross country. Ah, sorry, I thought you were talking about athletics.
No, definitely.
Okay.
Not.
No, that makes sense. That was probably quite cool, though.
Yeah, very cool.
You find like a little bush pub somewhere.
They set up a marquee on the Paris Autodrome, Aerodrome.
Why do you always have to bring pub and alcohol into everything? It's incredible.
Because where else would you want
to we're talking about a wholesome motorsport activity, and you're like, oh, go and find
Hold on a second. Don't make out like I'm the outlier here. Let's be very clear. You're the outliers.
No, but hold on. Now I'm intrigued. What you seem to understand what Miles is talking about, but I don't know what a cross-country race is.
No, I mean, it seems like a rally.
It's basically...
It's a bit like the rim run.
It's road, on road.
It's like Dakar. You know those cars that you see, like Hiluxes and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It's mainly Hiluxes and Ford Rangers, I think.
Yeah,
because
Ford
every Rangers. South African likes a good Hilux.
Well, the country was built on the Instagram. Back of Hilux buckies.
Mm-hmm.
So was
ISIS.
It's done everything, the Hilux.
It really has.
It's built countries. It's destroyed countries.
So it's a proper race.
A proper race, yeah.
We got distracted.
So it's nothing like Rim Run. Okay.
No.
No, it's not.
But listen, we are the world champions for another 4 years, so I'm glad that you stopped the race and watched. I'm sure you'll remember that.
Yeah, I'm very glad for us.
Mm. Good.
So wait, news.
Yeah,
are
news.
We newsing?
We are newsing. We're going to keep it local. Bloodhound SSC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That stands for Super Speedy Car. This week reached 501 miles per hour up on the Huckski and Pan, because they're building it up slowly. They're ramping it up.
How many kph's is that?
I thought you guys would know, because you work in miles.
700.
What is it? 500?
700.
Yeah. It's 806. No, it's 806.
806 kilometers. No,
that's just testing, though.
That's so unbelievable.
No, it's half of what they need to do.
Wait. Allow me. So, the next goal is to go up to 550 miles an hour, and then this year they want to beat the 763.035 mile an hour record,
which is the actual world land speed record
by thrust.
Yeah.
SSC, super speedy car. Yeah. And then next year they're going to come
driven
back.
By the same driver, Andy Green, huh?
Andy Green, yeah. Wing commander.
Wing commander, Andy
Green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then next year they want to come back and do the 1,000 mile per hour.
I think we really need to make, I'm serious, need to make a plan.
No, we are going.
I'd like to do that.
The only question is whether we're driving there or whether my friend Joel, who's a fantastic guy,
he's going to fly us, in the helicopter. Wow.
How many seats in the helicopter?
A Bell, I think.
Yeah, it's a long ranger, so it's got six. Oh, there you go. Including the pilot.
How long do you think it'll take to get there by helicopter?
So those things don't fly that fast. I think like 200 k's an hour, 250.
Only?
Oh, they're very slow.
Okay.
So it would be quicker to go in the Diablo.
Yes, it would.
But now, hold on. Yeah. You said it did 800, successfully did 800 k's an hour.
So just 806
for a little bit of context,
yeah.
The cruising speed of an airliner is between 800 and 900 kilometers an hour.
Yeah,
that's how fast that thing is on the ground.
Yep.
That's already outrageous.
No, I think
would love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think to watch that, you know, you're going to be sitting around a lot. But imagine
in a nice little quaint bush pub.
Imagine
if there's a bush pub.
Very nice.
Imagine hearing that thing go through the sound barrier on the ground.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I must say, I'd be very keen to see that. I don't think we've ever discussed this. I was lucky enough to attend a lecture by Wing Commander Andy Green. That man is sub-zero cool, and he's just so interesting and just engaging as well. Very, very interesting guy. He was talking about his thrust SSC experience. I was pleased to see him back onto the Bloodhound project, and we were all very sad when it was shut down.
But it seems like it's full steam ahead now.
Full steam ahead.
So I think we must make a commitment here on air that we will be there.
I would love to go. Yeah.
No, we have to be there. We just simply have to.
It's just a very nice place to go and take photographs as well. It's a very picturesque part of the country.
Yeah, you know it well.
I do. I've been there for Speed Week. Yeah.
And space limitations, it will be the fastest a human will ever go on the ground. So even if they don't get the record, they won't be anywhere big enough to go faster than that. So it's something we need to do. And, you know, in the context of records being broken, like the sub-2-hour marathon and whatever conditions it was, I'm saying, like, it would be amazing to watch that.
Okay.
Agreed.
Let's do it.
World land speed records on the cards for South Africa, basically.
Yeah.
British team in South Africa. It's going to be awesome.
Maybe when we go, I'll have my Prius by then, and then we can do a fuel economy record run on the way there.
Very exciting.
See how little we can use.
I can't wait. Now I'm even more excited, Thomas.
Yeah, but
tell us what's next.
But you'll never get the Prius, because it means at some point you'll have to sell the material, which is never going to happen.
Oh, well, I might have a buyer for that, actually.
Another one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Might have a buy.
They come and
You've never said that before.
Mickey Burnett, you know.
Does he want the material?
He does, yeah.
Really?
He misses his old one so badly that he wants one, but he said the biggest downfall with the standard material was it didn't have enough power.
Wow.
So I said, well, this is what you need.
Nah, but he's moved down to the coast now. He doesn't need a turbo.
He does. He wants one. Yeah. He likes to go on these drives and stuff.
Okay. Well, we don't know Mickey Burnett.
Actually get him onto the show.
No, he'd be an interesting addition.
He would. Here's an interesting addition to the Audi range. In 2020, you'll be able to get an Audi R8 V10 rear-wheel drive only.
With a naturally aspirated V10.
Correct.
Nice.
And before, we used to get them, but they were limited edition. It was called the Audi R8 RWS.
RWS.
Really?
And they came out. Every now and again, there was a special edition rear-wheel drive R8. Now they're making it standard. You can order one next year. That's it.
Can you not just take the front drive shafts out like you could do in a Diablo?
Diablo, yeah.
No, because it'll probably upset some electrical device buried in the frunk, and then you'll have to spend $20,000 because it keeps popping. And you know,
the RWS, which was that the sort of run out of the pre-facelift of the current one, I think. It was true. Thomas is making lewd signs at I don't know at who. I'm hoping it's not at me.
It's but, this other gray man. He's gone.
So the RWS seems like it was a good thing in theory, but in practice, it never really set the world on fire. And it wasn't the idea of a rear-wheel drive V10 Audi seemed to be better than the reality for some reason. The car, they didn't set it up. I don't know. Nobody who drove it seemed to particularly think it was better than the Quattro. I don't know.
They missed a trick. They should have had the rear-wheel drive when it still had the V8. Because that would have been perfect.
That'd be cool.
I think you want that in the V8. You don't necessarily want it
V10.
In a V10.
The V10, I mean, we've been in the V10 a fair amount. Yeah. It wasn't obviously four-wheel drive.
No. I think it's quite rear wheel bias. Yeah, very much so.
So that's why I don't know how much of a change.
Well, it's funny, actually, because you'd imagine the Balboni edition Gallardo to be talked about a lot more. But it actually isn't, so it's probably the same thing. Same idea. That is the exact same drivetrain. That is effectively the same car.
Yeah. The previous one, but yeah.
No, it is. And then you're saying that was the previous one as well, so it's the exact same drivetrain.
Don't know. Yeah, so I don't know why. Maybe they were designed with four-wheel drive in mind, and so making them two-wheel drive appeals in theory. But okay, I'm excited. Hey, any new naturally aspirated car is exciting for
us. And if they just happen to put a manual gearbox in it, it'll be...
No, it's not.
You see. Nice. So why go to all that trouble of removing the drive shafts and not changing?
I don't know. We should work for Audi or any motoring marketing department. We'll tell them how to do it.
Yeah.
The Aston Martin Dubai, the DBX. It's named after Dubai Airport. That's the code. Yeah.
Okay. It's very close to.
We did this in the last news.
No. The pricing has been announced.
Oh, really?
£158,000. Or in rands at the moment, 298.
2.9 million.
I mean, 2. I'm sorry.
Thomas Zimmer.
Zimmer.
I love that.
2.
2.98 million rand.
That's why I never became an accountant. 2.9 million rand.
Okay, but that's fairly well priced compared
to. It's unlikely that it'll end up being like that.
It'll be over 3.
Four. Yeah.
But I mean, Bentayga is.
It started at 2.9. Started 2.9. So but I definitely would rather have the Aston. And actually, the spy picks, it seems like the disguise is getting a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
So you can start making out what the back looks like. And it looks like it's going to be a cool-looking thing.
Yeah.
As cool as an SUV could be.
And again, we keep going back to the fact that the Cayenne saved Porsche. You know, if the existence of the DBX allows for the continuation of the core Aston sports cars, then I'm afraid... I'm happy that it exists.
And they need it because I don't know if you saw that the sales are down at Aston Martin.
Sports car sales permitting. Worldwide.
BMW M2 CS Club Sport. That was dropped this week. Do you guys like that?
Yes, I do.
I like the styling
on it. I think from a perspective of that, at least they're going a little bit more raw. I think it's cool.
It's a nice looking car. I was quite surprised. The power output struck me.
It's 331 kilowatts.
31 kilowatts. Yeah. The M2. I mean, all new cars are big, but the 2 Series is smallish as new cars go. It's a lot of power for a little car. I think it's quite a cool. I'm quite intrigued by it. I'm not even a BM kind of.
Yeah, those CS. Yeah, the M4 CS, for example, I found much better than the standard M4. So.
Mm-hmm.
Nadav loved that car as well.
The CS, no.
He loved M4. Anything M4.
I went actually.
Well, you ruined it for me with the GTS.
I went in an M4 on Tuesday. It was the first time I've actually been in it.
Did you love it?
No. So I was a passenger, and I noticed it's actually quite hard sprung. I noticed it to be quite jarring, actually. Is that what...
Yeah, did you notice it struggles to put its power down very much?
No, he's driving very...
And the traction control light is always on.
No, but actually, I mean, when I drove the 1M, that was something that I did notice.
Yeah, but that was fun.
I mean, it definitely was, but I'm just trying to... I suppose because it was manual as well. But I'm trying to work out, like, on the M4. I've never driven one, so I really can't comment.
This will be manual. You can get it. It comes standard with a 6-speed manual.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Available here as well.
It's coming to South Africa first quarter next year.
In manual?
Yeah. So it comes standard as manual. You can put in the MDCT if you want.
I think it's quite exciting. As a last hurrah for the current shape M2, and I think maybe the engines as well, I think it's going to be pretty cool.
Well, I actually liked it for one reason, is that Craig Watson, the little troll.
Just
he just bought an M2, and now the competition comes out, and like it was so cool for me to go and say, Watson must be dying right now. Although he hasn't had a car for so long, so he's quite excited, but he's looking to order all those. What are those little things that you put on the grills that make it?
Grill badges.
There's three colors.
But you can make it into a club sport. You just got to get you must speak to Mark Paluta's mate.
What do you think he could make an M2 competition tribute?
You just need a lighter bonnet because the club sport has a carbon fiber bonnet. Okay. Mm. So all you need to do is ask Mark Paluta's friend Diego, who owns the pool company. He does a lot of that fiberglass. Ask him to make a fiberglass mold. Mm. It'll look exactly OEM and probably cost you R1,000.
Yeah. But maybe even less.
But what do you think? So should we give him the advice to do an M2 competition or CS tribute?
CS tribute, yeah.
Homage.
I think so.
A tasteful homage.
Yeah.
And then you just go to Revo and ask them to put in some software.
Some chips.
Because it's only 29 kilowatts more than the competition.
That's a lot of kilowatts.
Yeah. You know,
it's a very small car. Yeah. I've driven a standard M2, pre-competition MDCT.
Yeah,
it was not lacking in power at all. No. I must say, I'm very, very tail happy.
Yeah.
The other thing that the M2 has, the M2 CS that I noticed, is a carbon fiber center console.
Yes, it does.
Do you think they realized that was like, you know, that the sort of cooler box plastic of the normal center console wasn't good enough?
Way too much, I think. Yeah,
yeah. Also, it's so much lighter as well. Big difference.
The interior of the 2 Series is awful. I will say that. I've said it before here, I think. So that's a reasonable upgrade.
But in the context of BMW and the junk that we talked about that they're making with front-wheel drive and rubbish like that, like this is, by all accounts, is a breath of fresh air.
No, it's going to be a good car. I think I'm genuinely excited about it. I think that's cool.
Do you know what?
It's newsworthy.
I was quite excited. So Mini John Cooper Works Clubman. I've always been a big fan of the Mini Clubman. I think it's the coolest Mini.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's also come out this week. That's got a big turbo on the 2-litre motor. It kicks out 225 kilowatts, 450 newton meters of torque. It's got all-wheel drive. That car will hit 0 to 100 in 4.9, which is just 0.7 seconds slower than the M2.
It's a nice car for wifey, Sport.
Great car for wifey.
But let me ask you this: Have you driven the Clubman?
Yes.
What I'm wondering is that the extra wheelbase, does it blunt the experience?
No. Unless you're going around the Nürburgring, trying to set lap times, you won't notice anything.
I've just googled
I'm not debating. I'm not convinced on that because I tell you, because short wheelbases around town is actually the one thing that makes a car seriously fun. And I've got two cases in point, the 4C and then the Z3 M Coupe. The thing that makes that M Coupe so much fun is that it can pivot on its own axis. It's like the original Mini, that's what it did. That's its gig.
I was going to say, if you want that, you must get the first generation of the new Mini or the second generation of the new Mini. This current one is
massive
just
car.
It's like a Golf.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Expect that same amount of pivotability, you're not going to get it.
So I'm looking at the Clubman.
Okay, that's good advice.
It's the four-door hatch thing Mini.
Yeah, it's cool.
No.
That's the coolest one.
Yes, it is.
How much is this?
No, 642.
Hold on.
Remember, the previous generation was two doors.
Yes, 642,000.
Which was like a shooting brake. It was actually a four-door because it actually had a small door on the side.
On the one side, yes.
That was also cool.
I will say this, though. Like, Nadav is right. Unless it's got seriously big wheels, it does look a little bit dumpy. So you need to get the JCW, as you're saying. Like, we're not talking about getting the mundane one. We're saying get the hot one.
That's not cool. I'm looking at it. It's
get the hot dumpy Clubman. Yeah, that's the coolest one they make.
It's too long. No. I'm going with no.
Do you think it's pointless?
Why is it?
Because the previous Clubman JCW was so cool. It was like sub-zero cool. This is just dumpy four-door Golf thing.
Do you know what's not cool?
What?
Is the Audi RS Q8.
Why not?
It's ridiculous.
It's so cool.
It's the fastest SUV around the Nürburgring. Big deal.
That's a big deal.
742 or something.
This is what Audi said. We wanted to make the RS Q8 No, sorry, I read that wrong. Right. We wanted the RSQ8 to be able to deliver on the track, but also be usable every day. Which RSQ8 owner or Q8 owner ever wants to go to a track?
Me.
Yeah, but you own an RSQ8. You are biased to the degree that it's unreasonable.
Come on.
Because no, you own an RSQ3, and you love Audi more than life itself. So it's not saying true. Like.
In fact, you have a tramp stamp with an RD logo.
You weren't supposed to give that fact away. Yeah. Thomas.
Well, we won't say what it is, but sometimes it has two rings, sometimes it has four. Look, in all honesty, the thing is that RSQ8, I'll give it only one thing, is that it looks better than the Urus.
Yeah,
it does, but just buy a normal one. I have one now at the moment. It's the most easygoing, wafting car. You can see it after the show.
Oh! Why didn't you? Is this? No, you just dropped that. No, surprise.
Oh. I dropped a Q8 bomb.
I'm excited.
I don't want that car to go fast. I don't want to go around the Nürburgring. It's a nice, big, comfortable cruiser.
Okay, but let me repackage it for you. Yeah. It's a cheaper KN turbo, and it's a cheaper Urus. Why not? It's a good-looking car.
No.
I
don't
and know. It not will take it depreciate.
It will dip hard. So hard.
And so... This guy, I reckon we're going to be driving it in the sort of medium term future. That's a cool car, man. Come on, get excited. It's better looking than the Urus. It's cheaper than a Cayenne Turbo. Come on, they're all the same.
They're all the same. And with that, we have to take a break because Paige. No.
How much is it?
I don't know.
It hasn't
priced. It must be over $2 million.
I'm sure, but you know how much a Cayenne is. Yeah, it's expensive. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
They're all the same.
Cool. The good news is that you're going to be swapping out a GT3 for a
RSQ8. Amazing.
An extra 1,000 kilos. That's where the value is.
Yeah. All right, guys. We are going to take a quick break.
Okay.
Be back shortly.
Thanks. Cool.
Racial identity politics, a phrase that has the potential to start an argument in just about any situation. That's why we're starting it first. Let's Start an Argument is a unique and insightful podcast series about the meaning of race to us today. Presented by researcher Cecilia Koch and Doctor of Philosophy Jason Werbeloff, the series aims to spark rational argument and meaningful discussion around this controversial topic. Find Let's Start an Argument now on the Cliff Central app, cliffcentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Now, our last episode was Halloween themed, and we had a whole thing on automotive horror stories, which you would know, Mike, if you had been here, but you know. But turns out after recording, Nadav and I went to McDonald's together in a car.
Yes.
Ooh. Two men.
Drive through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We did.
Did you eat in the car?
Controversial.
Yeah, we did.
Whose car was it? Was it Nadav's car?
No, this Audi's car.
No way in hell.
Yeah.
It was Audi's car.
And while we were there enjoying our milkshakes, Nadav said that real fear, real automotive horror and fear comes from watching this YouTube channel, which is called?
P-Tech, yeah.
Okay.
It stands for?
So Porsche Tech. Porsche Tech, yeah.
And why should we be so fearful of this?
Okay, so this channel that was actually recommended to me by YouTube, I think it was on the algorithm, nothing else. So YouTube itself recommended it. I had a look, and what it is a channel about a Porsche Tech working in Chicago who seems that the dealership has allowed him to record his day. In other words, he's got a couple of GoPros, he's got his own bay, and he can record what happens inside the bay, and he's got a portable camera that he takes and he shows you what he's doing. So I think what happens in the beginning of the day is the beginning of the week, you get an allotment of work and you start. You go outside and this is the car.
Working on modern Porsches?
Working on modern Porsches. Well, everything, but at the moment, I think the channel, there's nothing classic in there. And so it just gives you an insight into straightforward kind of common issues coming in through the front door of a dealership. You know, this is random, this is not sort of, it's not curated in any way, this is just what he's working on. And oh my God, is it scary, because modern cars, modern Porsches are not particularly at fault here at all modern cars. They are so complex. So many systems that are interacting. So many things that are so carefully crafted. But seemingly, there doesn't seem to be consideration for the future. For if something goes wrong, how are we going to fix it? And I think, you know, in spite of the fact that most of these systems these days are actually modular, nobody's tried to fit them in such a way that should one of these modular systems break and need to be replaced, because we all joke that people are replacement technicians now, not mechanics. There doesn't seem to be a way to get at it easily, to remove this away as a subsystem from where it's been nestled. I mean,
so hold on. So is it a matter that the things are complex and that they can't be repaired, or is it just that the labor to actually replace these things is so complex? Because I remember when my business partner's Cayenne, we had serious oil leaks, and it was Gen 1 Cayenne, and I just remember the labor to move the front suspension apart away so that they could get to it was just, I mean, it was like 30,000 rand just labor just for that.
Yeah, it's exactly
that. And the actual item wasn't overly complex.
Exactly that. A little oil leak from something, you know, that two surfaces mate, you know, they could leak oil in the future. Surely there's a way to maybe think about the likelihood of that and make the access a little bit easier. But exactly that, one of the examples was an oil leak from the cam cover of one of the V6 engines in a Cayenne. In other words, it's not a pressurized system, it's just the top of the engine, so it's just the cam cover that's leaking. He had to strip the front of the car. There must have been 3 days of labor.
Are you serious?
I swear, it took him, I think it must have taken him 3 days to get rid of, move everything so that he can get the stupid cover off.
Well,
and fix a little oil leak that's actually not mechanically consequential. Does that make sense?
Well, I've got a leaky cam cover on the Diablo, and I mean, oof, it's been there for a while. So they've just said, in order to get to it, the engine has to come out.
Mm.
Now, that means the whole back section of the car has to come off. And then, I don't know if you've ever seen a Diablo engine come out, but it takes the gearbox with it, including the gear lever.
Right. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Including the gear lever.
Including the gear lever.
It doesn't screw off.
No.
No, the whole thing actually cantilevers and then comes out.
Yeah.
And, but...
yeah, I mean, okay, but the Diablo... It was, hold on. So the Diablo...
was designed by stupid Italians, sure.
It's a low volume, it's exotic supercar. If you told me that story, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, that's just the way it is. But I mean, they're making like 100,000 Cayennes a year. This is a commodity item. This is a mass-produced car. Surely, this has been considered. Anyway,
well, maybe it really has, and we'll get into that just now. But I mean, logically, this problem is more impactful for cheaper. What do you call it? Audis and VWs.
Mm-hmm.
That Touaregs, which is ostensibly the same car, become throwaway or very small things. Exactly.
Well, I think a lot of them. I mean, I've just had I had the new A1 on test, which you saw last week.
Yep, I did.
And you saw the interior. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's got all these amazing touch screens, mm-hmm. and you can swipe up and down like an Apple iPad, etc., etc. But you just think, okay, in like 14 years' time,
where are we going to be?
And how is any of this stuff still going to work? If it's broken... like,
you won't find a replacement for that.
Exactly. And
you
need
an A1 specific screen.
Yeah.
Look, I still think that there can be a certain amount of consideration for fixability. So from the tech world, there's that team of people. Are they called iFix?
Yeah.
Like whenever there's a new big tech product, they immediately get one of the first things and tear it down.
Mm.
And they give it a fixability rating. And fixability is something that if you engineer in from the beginning, you can run with it and you can make certain compromises to make sure that this item is repairable rather than just throw away. But the need to do that and the impetus to do that doesn't seem to exist either in the new throwaway electronics market, but I guess cars are becoming throwaway electronics as well.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think as soon as electronic cars start to break into the mainstream and that's what people start buying, I mean, then you're talking about, I'm going to have this car for 4 years, 3 years, trade it in, keep going, or just lease it because it's going to be cheaper.
Well, I think the unsaid implication is that these cars under motor plan. If you intend to buy something like a Cayenne or a Macan or a Panamera, that these are the cars that are on this channel commonly. I'm just thinking that I think at Porsche Center's current labor rate is, and I stand to be corrected, something around 2,000 rand an hour.
Oh.
Okay.
Sure.
So between 1,400 and 2,000 rand an hour, I don't think that that job took him less than 14 hours. To replace the cam cover.
A leaky cam cover.
So that's 28,000 rand in labor. Hey?
It just doesn't add up. Like it just,
you know, who, I don't know who's going to be able to afford to do that.
No,
so
they start bringing into play some alternative solutions, like petrol and a match.
Exactly. So it's very sad to think that a car that's actually otherwise okay, like this, an inconsequential oil leak, really, you know, it becomes a throwaway item because no one in their right mind can actually afford just the labor to fix it, never mind the parts. What's also interesting is the warranty repairs. You know, there's a lot of recalls and fixes that happen. The amount of labor to change, I mean, so this is obviously dealership cost, but it must be costing the manufacturers a fortune. If they'd made it easier to fix in the first place, you know, then these fixes don't need to cost them so much in time, labor lost, and these are bays occupied in warranty fixes, which doesn't generate income, you know, from the customer. Anyway, it's been quite eye-opening, and I think that's why we wanted to discuss it.
But I think, so it's the thing, this fuels the throwaway mentality. Mm.
Yeah, totally does.
I mean, I'm calling a little bit of conspiracy theory. Yeah.
It's not conspiracy. Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not saying it's not complex. I'm just saying I don't think the prevalence of these types of jobs, or the frequency that these things happen is that prevalent. So,
so in other words, you're seeing the worst of what happens to him during the course of a week.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that. I mean, he's focusing on the big jobs maybe. But I'll give you an example that blew my mind in particular. A lot of modern cars get sold with extras. You know, you buy a pack, and the pack includes this and heated seats and power mirrors and this and that now. Then a lot of the things are the driver aids at the moment. And I think you get a driver aid pack that has a rear camera, park distance control, and lane change assist to check that, you know, there's nobody in the lane next to you. And if the rear bumper of a Macan, for argument's sake, is removed for whatever reason, access to something behind it, minor paint damage, whatever, that whole system needs to be recalibrated, and it needs to be done manually. There's a special calibration chart that you have to bring out. So you have to buy. You have to have it in order to buy from Volkswagen AG. You have to bring it out. It's the size of a table. You bring it out and you lay it out behind the car. You have to measure the vertical height of it compared to the floor, how far it is from each wheel. You have to set it up, and then you have to get a Doppler shift generator from the garage, also supplied by Volkswagen, on a pole in order to calibrate this whole system. It must take hours.
What they've safely done is remove the ability to fix your car at home.
Impossible.
There's no more reaction on
proprietary
your own
stuff. Yeah. And imagine just that, just getting that system calibrated on its own.
I think the ultimate reference point is the 911 engine, the air-cooled 911 engine, because that comes out of the car in a matter of probably an hour.
It's designed to do that. And people are like, oh, you have to take the engine out. But
there
it was designed to do it. You can take it out and get to whatever you wanted, cam cover or gearbox.
And
that
starts from the first, the first mouse movement or pencil stroke, when you design something. If you consider repairability and accessibility early. But I think people are choosing not to. It's a choice. And they're disposable, and the truth is it'll probably end up on the scrap heap. So what's the point?
So yeah, if you have any really expensive cars, you really should be so scared. And hold of us at Cargumentative because we might just be interested in taking them off your hands. Right. So we don't want you to have any drama.
But is there a segue here to the Audi thing?
There is a segue because you own a car that's part of that Volkswagen Audi
part
group.
Family.
Yeah.
And so top tip, we like consumer advice here.
We do be very big on that.
We've mentioned it as a rumor at some point in one earlier show. That Audi is changing their motor plan in South Africa to up to 10 years.
Yeah, so it comes standard with 5.
Standard with 5, but extendable up to 10 years.
Correct, yeah.
Does that extend to the rest of the group as well, so VW?
No, it's an Audi product at the moment. And not only does it extend up to 10 years, it's particularly attractively priced at the moment. And so that takes out a little bit of the guesswork and the scariness of owning a modern car outside of plan. Now you can actually buy one with the intention of keeping it for a decade.
But I see that that's where it just completely contradicts it, because you know the companies aren't in the market for to make losses. So you know if they're going to take 14 hours to go and do stuff, I mean they factored this in. So I really don't think this is as big a thing as the guys are making out. I mean he's got a great YouTube channel, I'm sure. This Cayenne came in here and it was a major problem and all I did was run some software and it fixed it in 20 minutes. That's not great for YouTube.
Yeah, so I get your point. I take your point. You know, maybe we're seeing the worst of the worst, but still, it's scary stuff.
Yeah. Cool.
So top tip, if you can extend that motor plan, definitely do it.
And if you can avoid buying options, do it. They're just going to more things go wrong, more things to fix. Yeah.
Keep it straight and simple.
Yeah.
Stupid. Unless like you've got that Doppler thing like under a motor plan, just make sure, just go in there and tell them it needs calibration.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, like back in the '80s, they're like, so what I've got? I've got like a toolbox and a Bosch fuel injection checking system.
Yes.
I've got now you can say I've got Doppler radar.
Doppler
for
radar.
Aligning.
Amazing.
Aligning my park sensors.
My park sensors.
Crazy. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back shortly.
Guns, an essential tool in self-protection or a catalyst for criminality. CliffCentral.com presents Guncast, a podcast that unpacks the divisive issue of gun ownership in South Africa. Join legal expert Martin Hood as he hosts a series of talks with both sides of the gun lobby. Whether you support the right to carry guns or you believe they're a destructive tool that society could do without, Guncast will enlighten and challenge you in equal measure. Find Guncast now on the Cliff Central app, on CliffCentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Miles, you've been quite quiet on this show.
I have.
You have. So, I think we should have a chat.
About?
What's in your garage? What do you drive?
I drive press cars as much as I can.
Yeah. There's a set of Volvo keys on the table, which they're making me feel a little bit ill.
That's an XC60 from Volvo.
Yeah.
Mark
would have loved it.
Yeah.
I drive that.
Which motor?
They're all one of them.
D5. Yeah, it was awful. One of the worst cars I've driven in ages.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
I have very sad memories of the XC60. Yeah.
But yes, otherwise I've got a 156 GTA Alpha.
Ooh.
Aha.
Oh, there you go. You see.
I knew you would.
Mike's working up.
Mike's working up.
Mike, stop looking at the porn.
You know that I drove a
147 GTA.
It relaxes me. I drove a 147 GTA. So effectively it's very similar. It's the same engine. Mm-hmm.
Same
drivetrain.
Yeah, yeah.
I was blown away how good that motor is.
It's very good.
It really is. It's just
some would say it's the best part of the car.
It is the best part of the car. I would say that.
I'm not.
Other parts of the car not so good though.
No.
What color is your 156 GTA?
Red.
Oh, very nice. Very, very,
very
nice.
Very, very nice.
How long have you had it for?
Sure, I think 4 years. 4 years.
Okay.
How did you decide on a 156 GTA? How did you come across it?
I actually came across it. It had been accident damaged, and I figured I'd rescue it, because those weren't terribly popular here. Well, when I say not terribly popular, they only sold 40 or 50 of them. So, I decided I'd rescue it. It's cost me a small fortune since, as Alphas do, I think.
It's better than it costing you a big fortune.
You must speak to...
No, looking for positives.
That's true.
You must speak to Mark Paluta, who's not here, but he's very good at fixing Alphas for cheap.
Of course he does.
And then I've got a 2000 GT Veloce as well.
Which one is that again? Educate me.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a similar engine, isn't it?
No, that's 74-105 series.
Oh, 2000. I thought you said it went to year 2000.
No,
oh,
no, no, no.
GT Veloce.
Yeah, yeah. So that's essentially the shape everyone knows as a junior.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. Okay, I know that car.
Yeah.
I do know
that. That's very cool. What color is that?
That's white.
Very, very cool.
Not originally white. It's had a few resprays, and I recently uncovered a lot of rust.
Those cars weren't properly galvanized, were they?
No.
But so it all adds to the passion of the Alfa driving experience.
Yeah.
And also, rust is light.
Well,
not really, actually.
Well, it's the air that's light. Yeah, it's the
when there's no more steel, it's pretty light.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I've also got a Datsun 1200.
Race. That's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very cool.
That's supposed to be a race car, but it's in parts in my garage.
That's cool. Yeah. What color is that?
That was also white, but is now blue.
Okay.
I've resprayed it in my garden.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What paint did you use?
Some paint I got in an automotive paint shop.
Jeez.
I don't know.
Mark would be proud.
Yeah. Talking about Mark, we have to give a little plug to him because... Whilst he also likes to build alphas, he has started his own little business, and he's in the fruit and veg business, which seems a little bit stereotypical.
A little bit stereotypical.
He's like a caricature of himself.
But it's called Go Fresh.
Yeah. And he's very good at it.
Yeah, he's exceptional at it. He's bought a whole fleet of trucks, and he's delivering fruit and veg to all manner of people.
Yeah.
So, all the best to Poluski. Wow. Sorry, a little interlude there. I had to make sure we got
but
it
that's
in.
Why he's not here, he's
delivering veg?
He really is.
He drives the forklift himself.
We're working on a jingle as well, which we hopefully will turn to a series of
Go
radio.
Fresh.
I came up with something in my with some lyrics, but actually, to be honest, there was nothing that was clean. So I've just stopped.
So the but
let's talk more about the Datsun. So it's a blue car, and what was it going to be racing in, or what should it be racing in?
The historic series.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very nice.
Yeah, and that's pretty much my garage.
Okay, that's cool.
That 156 is cool. You see, I like the 156. And to a certain extent, I like the look of the 147, but it's terrible to drive.
I like the look of the 159. I really am a fan of
the I also like the 159.
Because it has the front end, really, of the Brera, which is, to me, is just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like one of those cars that it's just amazing that they made it.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing that you never see any of them.
I saw one 2 weeks ago.
Well, maybe it's
beautiful,
not amazing.
A really beautiful one. I mean, it had a different brown leather interior. Oh. Really
how expensive was that car when it came out? It was like 400,000 rand or something. It was like outrageous.
It was outrageously
priced.
But it was one of those like effectively almost like a Skunkworks type car where they just built it. They really it was heavy and slow.
But it just
looked beautiful, and that's the thing. So I mean, it definitely like it got a lot of flack for being not as good to drive as it should have been. Mm. But just what that thing looks like is just amazing.
It's still a great-looking car.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's true of all the Alphas, even though the 156 really is a great-looking car.
Yeah, it is.
And it was a return to form, I mean, for them, in a sense, because...
A return to understeer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
There's not an awful much good about that car.
It just sounds awesome.
Yeah,
that car does sound... I mean, that Busso engine, I think there are few engines in the world of all time that actually sound as good as that thing.
Sure.
It is.
Big words coming from Thomas Falconer.
It is. I mean, I spent some time on YouTube because I had a coffee break and I was just, Googling engine sounds and stuff. And those things sound seriously good, whether it's 2.5 litre or 3 litre or standard or exhaust. It sounds brilliant.
Mark has said so ad nauseum. It's true. And
annoyingly so.
Sometimes. But you've managed to secure one of 40 or 50 156 GTIs. Yeah. You're a proud owner.
That's cool.
So when do you drive it?
Not terribly often, I must admit.
Why is that?
Well, I forgot one car. I've also got a Subaru Forester.
Cool.
But fairly forgettable.
Tom must love that.
I like those.
You must have owned a Forester at some point in time.
I've looked at them.
They're incredible value.
Which one have you got?
I've got the SG, which is 04.
Oh, yeah, that's when they still were like wagons on stilts.
Exactly. Yeah,
those are
No,
awesome.
They're basically like the WRX on stilts, huh?
Yeah. Basically.
Yeah, it's cool.
But mine's only just got a 2 liter naturally aspirated.
But that's the one you want, really. Those turbos are very complicated, they're very expensive
Shut
to
up.
Run.
Faster is always better.
Around a racetrack, maybe. But not in the day to day drudgery of Johannesburg traffic.
No, faster is always better.
No.
Oh, Jesus.
It's not.
All right, okay.
Speaking of alphas.
Yes.
I got to drive off a 145 the other day. Nadav actually sent me on a mission.
That's right.
Yes, he did.
Nadav was interested in purchasing a car, a 145 Cloverleaf.
Where did he send you on this mission?
I happened to be in Cape Town for a car launch.
Oh, so you drove the actual one.
Yeah, and Nadav said, listen, my friend Rob from Carbs and Coffee.
Yeah.
Is expecting a phone call. So I said, I'm not going to phone him. I'm going to WhatsApp him.
Yeah, because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
It's expensive to phone.
It is. Yeah. And I'm a
nice journalist.
Yeah, I'm a journalist. Well, there you go. You see, he knows.
No,
you know.
No, but you get free cars, man.
Yeah. Anyway,
but
so...
not free petrol.
Long story short, Nadav wanted me to go check out this car. It was a 145 Cloverleaf, which you hardly see anymore. They're either, like, dead or about to die, or they, like... I don't know.
Modified, and usually they've got holes in their bumpers, cracks everywhere.
They really look shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And this one looked pretty good. You sent me photographs.
Oh.
I thought it belonged to an ex-colleague of mine, Ashley Oldfield. Well, I mean, he's still...
Oh, he
still
did have a 145.
He did,
well.
Yeah. But his was gold.
Yes.
Anyway, so he said, I'm keen on this car. Can you go drive it? So I did. And it had 245,000 Ks on it, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
You know, close up, a little bit knackered in terms of the interior, like the seats and stuff like that, but not a bad car. I mean, Alphas from that era don't age particularly well, as we know, but this one was still, you know, it was still good. And to drive it, I was impressed, man.
And it's a great car.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
And it was such a fun, I mean, its gearbox was great, the clutch was great, the engine was strong, it sounded good. And it was such a pleasure to get into something, into a sporty hatchback, because that's what the Clover, the Clover
was.
It was
a warm hatch.
Yeah.
It was quite a hot hatch.
You know, back in the day.
In its day, it was a hot hatch.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was both definitely a hot hatch.
It didn't have any more power than the normal 2 litre, though.
I think it had a switch.
How powerful was it?
No, but the 2 litre was a hot hatch. I mean, it was against a GTI at the time. And it was definitely faster than the Golf 3 of its era.
I think it had about 110 kilowatts.
What era was it? Is that Golf 3?
Golf 3, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, that was a bit of a dog, actually, Golf 3.
Oh, it was terrible. Shocking.
And so, if it had 100 and something kilowatts.
Yeah. I mean, that was a pretty big deal, because when the Golf 4 GTI came out, that only had 110 kilowatts. I mean, it had more torque because it was turbocharged, but this still had proper power.
So I didn't realize it was actually up there as a proper hot hatch.
No, I remember... So a friend of mine in Cape Town, he had a 145. His dad bought him an out of box 145, and it was off the charts that he got this. And I went to the dealership with him, and his car was having a service. And I remember the salesperson. She said to me, "I'd like to take it for a drive." I could not believe that. I mean, are you coming with me? And she was, "No, just go take it. Just be gentle." I wasn't. I just remember actually changing down to get it to rev, because it just made such a good sound relative.
Drift,
and I had a Golf 3 at the time.
Okay.
And it just was, it was different level. And it was so, so cool.
Well, I'm excited to say that, it may have not worked out for the Cargumentative. It was going to be a Cargumentative investment, but we still, I think, hopefully managing in some way to get that car up to Joburg.
Yeah.
So maybe this is not the last we've heard of it. Do a little bit of a focus.
Well, we were offered to go into it, and I was tempted, but there were two things that stopped me from going in, and it wasn't a big amount of money. But the first thing is that I prefer the pre-facelift.
That's true. This is a post-facelift.
But figures can't be choosers when it comes to.
You're right. But I do prefer the pre-facelift, and the second thing is just. Like, I am at a stage now where just space is now becoming a premium, and
you could have kept it here.
It's not, well, The thing is,
the space issue we'd already tackled and we'd resolved.
It's just like, and I'm at a point now where I've got too many cars to drive. I'm not like just not rotating the cars enough now.
No. You could have kept it here next to my Matera, so nobody parks next to it because A, it's ugly, and B, it's on top of the sewage outlet for the building, so it smells of excrement.
Okay. Yeah, listen, so as an amazing offer as that is.
And also, they look kind of similar. Matera and 145.
No,
square,
no, they do not. No, they're both square.
That's
the reach.
There's a lot of similarity there.
Who designed that car, the 145?
I think it might have been Giugiaro.
I think so, too.
That
was a proper design. It's aged beautifully. It's still a really good looking car.
But it was such fun, because at that time I was driving a B200, okay, which is kind of good. You know, cool-ish Mercedes MPV. I kind of like it because it's not an SUV. You know, if you want something, anyway.
What time was that? What are you talking about? I lost you completely.
I was when I went to go and see the Alfa. I was driving a B200. So I got out of the B200 and I drove the 145. Yeah. And the 145 was such a fun car to drive. It takes you back to this time where cars were like, I don't know, there was just something so
involving. It really was involving.
Manual gearbox and you know, the seating position is a little bit compromised, but you can get around that, and the engine's fun and it revs and it makes noises and you come off the gas and it pops a bit, and it was just a cool, it was fun. Like, and then I got out of that and I got into the B200 and I was like, you know what, modern cars have become so sterile and so you're so filtered from what's going on.
Wow, you just.
No, I mean, 110 kilowatts was fun.
It really was.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. It was fun, and you like enjoyed it, and you revved it up, and I don't know.
But you just described the 4C.
No, I did not.
Look at you waxing lyrical about an Alfa. I'm very impressed.
But I mean, I think if you get into any car of that era, hot hatch, I mean, a VR6, a 145, an Opel 200 ISE, even though you guys had Opels, but it kind of has that similar.
I'd also said that, you know, that it's been through the crucible, you know, hasn't it? You know, to make 230,000 Ks on an Alfa, you know, it's number one, it has to be a good one from the start. Yeah. That wasn't a sort of Friday afternoon car. And number two, it's obviously been looked after. I mean, it's done at least triple the mileage.
Every reason to buy this car. There was every reason.
I was surprised when you pulled out, Mark. I was very surprised. But,
I've got a few that I need to offload. Still have the CL, still have the 944.
And the Zonda.
The Zonda Touring.
You still got the Zonda Touring?
Yep. No, we're married to that car.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, good luck. Good luck, GLWS, right?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, that thing was cool. I will say, however, that when you really rev this car high, you would get the smell of engine coming through the air vents.
I love smells of engine.
Yes.
You know, which was kind of like, you know how Peugeot and Citroen and Mercedes have these perfumes that you can, that go into the, and then you can push a button and this nice aroma comes out? Well, the 145 started it.
Alfa aroma.
But with alpha engine.
It's a disintegrating belt aroma.
Something like that. It was cool.
Okay. I look forward to see what belt disintegrates.
Well, hopefully it comes back and there's another consideration.
Yeah, I'd like to see if it's back on the market, you know, put it here in the studio.
You know what I also saw the other night, which I don't think I shared with you guys, was a Honda CRX.
Very cool.
Did you see that Honda CRX?
I told you to buy it. You didn't listen. That's a cool car.
That was awesome.
But alright, well, 90s, we should have a segment on 90s cars, you know.
We should.
Young timers, as they're being known.
Maybe we can have like musical segues between. Yeah. We can all choose our favorite song from the 90s. Play a little bit of that. I don't know how much we can play before we get sued for copyright infringement.
I don't know. We'll find out.
3 seconds.
3 seconds.
Yeah. There we go. We can do that.
Wow. We can. But then let's engage with our listeners.
Let's do that.
We always direct them to the Instagram account.
Yeah.
So we want to hear from them. At Cargumentative.
Is that legit now, Paige? Am I going to get fired for it?
What?
Probably, yeah.
Oh, okay. Whoops. Yeah. All right.
It's well, okay.
Try and interact with us there if you feel like it and you don't want to get Thomas fired. And tell us what 90s cars we're not thinking of.
Yeah. You know.
90s hot hatches.
Yeah.
No, 90s cars. Just 90s cars are back, baby.
90s cars are...
And teal paint. Have you seen? Like, so many cars.
Fantastic.
The RAV4 launch color here was teal.
993
teal.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Teal is solid. Yeah. Hashtag cool. Bring Till back. Make yeah. Till great again.
Okay. Right. I can see Mike's getting tremors. He wants to go and drink tequila. Yep. Dove needs to go off and put
be
some...
Be a dad.
Put some, okay.
Yeah.
That's good. And Miles?
Miles, thank you for being with us.
Yeah.
Thanks, and, Miles.
Look forward to
many
meeting
miles
together with the alphas.
Yeah, no, you're better than that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Never heard that one before.
Dad joke.
We want to see the 1-5... We want to see your 156.
Yes, we do.
Next time you come,
we really, really do.
Sure.
Actually, I want to see your junior. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I need
Thanks
to
come you, and
attach some rust holes.
Make it dirty. Come on, man.
Dad jokes.
Funny, funny. Yeah. Funny, funny. Cool, guys. Thanks
all right,
so much.
Catch
okay.
us again next
Great
week.
Great to be back, guys.
For another Thanks episode for of Car Augmentative. Keep it safe out of the roads. Enjoy. Goodbye.
Good luck.
Bon voyage.
Ciao.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.